Ms. Nichols, good morning to you. You may approach. And you may proceed.
Thank you. I'd like to reserve any time for rebuttal, please. Okay. Justices of the Supreme Court, this appeal has come to and I feel like I am coming to you as somewhat of a torchbearer in the darkness of justice. And you need to know what's been going on. It's been going on for a long time, and it seems like this issue is getting progressively worse. So I'm coming to you bearing this torch on behalf of my client, the appellant, on behalf of his children, and on behalf of all members of the Nebraska Bar who hold so dear the right and privilege to practice law in this state. Every time we walk into a courtroom, we are depending on the integrity of the floor to hold us up. What if the floor suddenly gave way in the middle of the trial? Would a judge just leave it unaddressed for the next party to come in? Of course not. So that's what we're here today to do. We're here to ask you to fix what has been going on, and we're here asking you to embrace your authority to render the decision that should have been made at trial and to correct what's been done since.
Well, what is going on?
Arbitrary impositions of time limitations have been problematic. For example, in this case, there was an outright denial of cross-examination. That was problematic after the court counted time against me that was used outside of the courtroom to review evidence.
Did you agree to the time limitation initially?
The time limitation was not a problem in relation to the length of time. I understand the 6.5 hours. We'd all like to have more. But I understand the 6.5 hours. That is not the objection. The objection is the way that the court counted my minutes against me. Because he counted the time spent in chambers reviewing those meetings privately by himself at his own convenience against my total trial time, in court trial time.
Did he tell you he was going to do that?
He told me that he was going to count the time in the DVDs against me. I had brought up TVs to the courtroom. I was ready to show these DVDs in court. I intentionally did not do that in order to save those precious minutes for my trial time.
And did you object at that point in time?
Yes, I objected numerous times. My objections are found. They're cited on page 51. If I may, I wanted to return a little to some of the other issues in this case.
Well, before you go to other issues in the case, did each side have 6.5 hours?
Yes, Your Honor.
And could you, for example, have not submitted the entire tape to the judge?
Yes, and I tried to do that. I tried to submit only 10 minutes. Even just the first few minutes to make the point. The court would not allow that. This conversation took place off the record, and I believe I wanted to give you guys
this
citation.
Did you say off the record?
Yes, it did. I wanted to give you guys this citation to know how this happened, because it was the judge that insisted that we go off the record, and it was then that I made my argument. I did my best to preserve a record in this case, but the tone at trial was extremely tense, and I was doing my best not to get thrown in jail.
Did you make the request under Rule 2-105A that every word be taken?
No, Your Honor. The court said let's go off the record and counsel approach.
You understand that under our Rule 2-105A, any party has the right to insist that every word be taken. And you don't have to agree to go off the record. Do you understand that?
At the time, Your Honor, it was so tense. The judge was insisting that we went off the record at that time, and the tone was that I was somehow in trouble. Opposing counsel and I looked at each other, like, what's going on? We approached, and he said, you waived your cross-examination. I said, how? Why? And he said, you're out of time. I said, can I withdraw them? He said, nope.
But none of that's in our record.
It's not, but it's what happened. And other things reports have been that substantiate that sentiment, which is expressed with the subtlety of a bullet train going through my living room. The evidence here was, in my opinion, and in the words of plaintiff's expert, very black and white. She describes parental alienation as being very black and white, and she gave a very descriptive definition during her trial testimony. She described Dr. Topp, plaintiff's expert, described parental alienation as conduct by one parent that is detrimental to their child and manifests in well-recognized reactions of hatred expressed by the child towards the other parent. In the alienated child's mind, nothing that parent can do is right. The child will report that they never had fun with that parent. Dr. Topp said PA was so black and white. The evidence at trial included numerous examples of these children expressing extreme, unfounded hatred towards their father, which the experts found to be unfounded. Both Dr. Meilinger, Dr. McConnell, Chris Steinbeck, none of them found any reason for these girls to be expressing such irrational fear towards their father. And
well, from a procedural standpoint, you're saying that you presented your case and then submitted some DVDs.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the trial court said, okay, I'm going to read all this, or I'm going to look at all the stuff in the DVD, and that starts to your time clock, and if it takes me X number of hours that exceeds 6.5, then you have no more right to cross-examine the witnesses? Or?
No. What the trial court said was, I asked the court if I could offer the DVDs. Opposing counsel asked, well, is that time going to be counted against her? Judge said yes. So then I offered them, but I did not show them. We did not go through these videos in court the way that I had wanted to. And that was why I did that, because I wanted to save my time. So at the end of the day, the judge then pulls us up to the bench and says, I'm counting this time against you, and I'm going to look at them in chambers. And where he said he was going to look at them on his own time,
Is that in the record?
Yes, that is in the record. I can give you the citation.
So are you claiming that you didn't have enough time to present your case,
no,
in chief, or you didn't have enough time or were not or were refused the right to cross-examine the witnesses by the opponents?
I'm complaining that the judge counted time reviewing those privately outside of court against me. He did not do so to the other party.
What was the result in counting that time against you? What were you prevented from doing when that time was counted against you?
That time, 55 minutes for one video, I think it was 50 minutes for another one, 49 for another. That's a lot of time. When you're only given 390 minutes, that's a lot. So he counted all that time against me and said, okay, no cross-exam. I did not get to ask one single cross-examination question of any of the plaintiff's witnesses.
That's what I wanted to know.
However, I would also ask this court to render a decision at this level, which should have been rendered at the trial, for the reason that even without cross-examination, I believe that this record is complete enough, especially in the brief. I did very little paraphrasing. This brief is mostly facts. I have citations to the record in here. See all the instances where plaintiffs...
Well, what's our standard of review?
Your standard of review is de novo on appeal, and...
De novo for abuse of discretion?
It's for clear error, and also for abuse of discretion. It says, appeals in domestic relations case are reviewed de novo, and court is empowered to enter the order which should have been made as reflected by the record according to Shockley v. Shockley. These facts, I would submit, compel immediate action. We cannot let these little girls. Relief will not come from the foul court below. This is still going on, this sort of seeing facts like this and then rendering the decision that was rendered in this case. It's pretty bewildering. I am begging to make the decision that should have been made at trial.
Suppose the trial court, you were making it your argument, or you, during the course of the trial, and you're putting on your evidence, and you refer to, have your witness refer to a particular document that you've marked as an exhibit that's about 400 pages long that will require the trial court to read that outside the trial time. Would, is this analogous to what you think the trial court did to you by counting that time against you?
Yes, it is exactly analogous.
Were you able to present all the evidence you wanted to present on your side of the case?
I'm sorry?
Were you able to present all the evidence you wanted to present on your side of the case?
I would say the vast majority of it, yes.
But you, you claim you were not entitled to cross-examine any of the opposing counsel's witnesses.
That is correct. However, one of the benefits that you all have up here on appeal is that you get the benefit of my brief, where I can show you every time that the lied, contradicted herself, and the truth is found in an exhibit or through other witnesses' corroborating statements. And I did that throughout this.
Well, are you saying cross-examination wasn't necessary then?
I'm not saying that it wasn't necessary. I treasure cross-examination as a valuable tool of challenging the integrity and value of the witness. However, I was able to do that through my brief. And
once the judge told you he was going to count these, the time of the DVDs against you, did you ask him to? Did you ask to withdraw these exhibits, or to redact them, or change them in any way?
Yes, I did, and it was during that off-record conversation. I asked first. I asked to withdraw. I was denied.
But that's not in our record.
Correct. And I asked. I only showed 10 minutes, but the counsel objected, saying, "No, rule of completeness. You have to show all of them." And I tried. I did everything that I could, and I understand that it is my job to preserve the record. And the case law also says in Gold v. Gold, which was another involving arbitrary time limitations, that when it's not the aggrieved party's fault that pieces of the record are missing, that that should not be counted. I am submitting to the court everything I did to preserve this record.
But you concede you didn't make the take every word request that's permitted expressly under our rules.
I assumed that that was the action of the court reporter and also the idea. I was really shocked. I was disappointed. I would like to say that this is an isolated incident, this whole denial of all cross-exam, but I know that it's not. I'm because I don't feel that. Especially when it comes at such great cost. I may have offended the trial judge in some unknown way for which I am sincerely apologetic. I don't know what I have done over the last year. I really do not. However, these two little girls' best interests were depending on this judge to give a fair decision, and he didn't do that. And look at what it cost them. Is it right to let them go on in this year? HHS would have taken these kids. If the dad had made a complaint, you know, we debated that, but we were depending on the trial court.
And there's something in the record about HHS?
There's not. I work in juvenile court a lot, and court see what goes on. Children are taken out. What I'm saying is that it was not in these children's or physical well-being to allow this continued rejection of children. She was clearly poisoning their minds. Chris Steinbeck first saw this in 2012, shortly after the decree, because at the time for overnight visitation approached, all of a sudden there's false allegations of child abuse, which were proven by the detective to be blatantly false, and in his words, quote, implausible. So we have that happen right before overnight visitation was to begin after. And then the behavior escalate. Just don't think that sort of thing should be allowed to occur without the court intervening. Little girls jumping out of cars, running away, being incapable. Not acceptable.
Ms. Nichols, I believe your time. I hate to cut you off in a time limit case, but I believe your time is up here today.
Thank you.
Mr. Johnson, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Chris Johnson. I'm with the law firm of Conway, Pauley & Johnson. I'm here today representing the appellee, Ms. Jennifer Smith. I have listened to the questions of the court prior to my being summoned to the bench and would point out to the court in the record at 231 lines 1 through 10, there is the discussion about the time watching the DVDs and how it's going to be counted. And you will see that at that time, the trial counsel for the plaintiff in this case, which was Ms. Smith, my client, asked, is this time going to be charged to the defendant? The court said, yes, it will be charged to the defendant. There was no objection made at that time. There was no summoning to the bench for an off-the-record conversation. If one is going to argue a matter on appeal, they first must make a timely objection in the trial court level, or they waive their right to make an appeal of that issue.
I'm sorry, you're saying the record doesn't show that these things happened.
That's what I would say.
Not that they did or did not happen.
Right. It's not a case where you have an 18-minute hum some years ago. You can see as you read the record, a natural, what I would call, give and take of conversation between counsel and, okay, you can hang on and call your next witness, things of that nature. You don't see, please approach, or something like that, or we're going to have an off-the-record discussion. I'm not saying...
Would these DVDs have been reviewable by the court at its leisure to look at them when he had extra time or something that wasn't... Didn't have to look at them during the course of the trial or scheduling, did he?
Could they have been?
Yes.
Well, certainly they could have been.
So why does the court say, because I'm going to have to take a little time and read the exhibits, I'm going to charge you that against that your time in court so that the total time I will spend on this case is 13 hours, period?
Well, I believe, Your Honor, that would be a distinction without a difference, and here's why. If the court had said, go ahead and cue up your TV, cue up your monitor, let's watch them right now, it consumes the court's time. If the court instead chooses...
Well, there's a scheduling for trials, you know, and the court has scheduled events during the day, but it doesn't necessarily have scheduled events when it's not in chambers and it's has some time to look at exhibits in a particular trial without having to say, we'll look at all this exhibit during the course of the trial and then count that against you for your time in the trial. Certainly there would be some time that the court would have that wasn't scheduled for anything, wouldn't it?
I can't speak to the trial judge's calendar. I can say and would argue
that... Does that imply that you're going to work 40 hours a week, period, and nothing else, and that's all got to be trial time, and I have no other time that I'm going to allocate to review or look at the exhibits?
All I can tell you, Your Honor, is that this court, this trial judge, made a decision to say, I will view this trial exhibit that you've given me, and I'm going to count it as time, court time.
And then he said, because of that, you are not going to be permitted to cross-examine opposing counsel's witnesses?
No, he did not say that.
Well, if he didn't have any more time and she wasn't permitted to cross-examine the witnesses,
that's true.
Isn't that the same effect?
It is not, because everybody knew going in, because there had been a previous journal entry 20 days prior to trial, that you're going to have 6.5 hours per side. You can find that at T125.
So if I'm the opposing counsel, I want to cross-examine the other witnesses for 6.5 hours, and therefore then the opponent is done producing evidence because it took 6.5 hours to get through one witness?
If you're going to have a time limit, I think the word limit has to mean something. Court told everyone in this journal entry 20 days before trial...
But aren't we looking at the fairness of the result here?
Well, I think fairness is that the rules apply to both sides. You can take the matter up on plain error, even if you find that because there was no objection made, because there wasn't an objection made to the journal entry when it was filed 1st of August, there wasn't an objection made.
Would the objections have done her any good?
How can you say?
Mr. Johnson, would you inform us on the other issues and what your position is on the other issues that the court decided?
Well, with respect to the other issues, I think were raised, the issue of attorney's fees, the issue was raised as to the weight and sufficiency of the evidence. I think clearly in an appellate setting, you're looking at abuse of discretion. The court noted in its order that the different versions of the evidence in this case are widely disparate. In other words, they're not even close to being on the same planet. And the judge made a decision as to which witnesses to believe and to credit and which witnesses to not believe and to not give credit to. The judge made that decision, which is what they're supposed to do. They're the deciders.
And that was achieved through oral testimony?
As far as the evidence? Or the
credibility.
Court.
You're saying it came down in large part to credibility.
Is that right?
And that was in court testimony. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And was the mother cross-examined?
She was.
Was the father cross-examined?
Yes. But I want to talk about cross-examination, because I think that is a very important issue for this case today. In this case, as I stated, the parties were informed well in advance of trial. You're going to have 6.5 hours, and that's going to include opening statement, direct examination, and cross-examination. At the beginning of trial, the same rule was repeated. Everybody knew what was happening at the time of the trial. Everybody knew what the rules of the game were. Now this court...
I'm sorry, so the journal entry refers to trial time.
Yes, it does.
And then is that understood to be in the courtroom or also include what the judge does in chambers, as Justice Wright was suggesting?
The journal entry does not define trial time. But the court, when it said, I'm going to count this as time against the defendant, made that very clear. And there was no objection at that time.
So the journal entry says trial time, which will include opening, direct, cross, so forth. So those are in court events.
They are.
Those were the examples of what trial time means.
They are. I don't know if that would mean that that's. I don't know that that means that's all there is. Now, and the reason I think that that's not fatal to my argument is because that when the court said, I'm going to count this as time against the defendant, again, there's no objection, and there's no motion to withdraw the exhibits either. You know, there was a discussion that when we had an off-the-record talk, and I asked her, there's no motion to remove the exhibits or to redact the exhibits.
Well, under that premise, if the party offered one exhibit that would take the court 6.5 hours to review outside of the courtroom, then the party who offered the exhibit would have no more time in open court to present any other evidence.
I don't think that's true. The reason I don't think that's true, and this court has previously held, that if you have a situation where you have a time limitation that is putting you under pressure where you cannot fully present your case, you, as counsel, need to take protective measures such as asking for a continuance, asking for more time, or objecting to the limitation that has been imposed. None of those things were done. All of those things were available. We can't say today how the judge would have ruled.
Well, didn't opposing counsel make some objections?
She made objections to certain exhibits as they were being offered, which were not counted against her. She could also argue her objections, which were not counted against her. But this court even upheld a case where there was no cross-examination allowed. I'm sorry, that was the Court of Appeals, the court below this one. Geese versus Geese, G-E-I-S-S, and I have the slide here for you. Because the court said we're following our rules. It's 20 Nebraska Appellant 861 in 2013. In that case, I'm sorry, I'm about out of time, but in that case, the court didn't allow any cross-examination or examination of any witnesses or production of witnesses at all because it found that the father in that case had not followed local court rules. And the court said that was proper. It went ahead and took the matter up on plain review. First of all, there was no objection. There was no motion for continuance, and so the court said, you've waived your right to say that there's been You've been deprived of a substantial right. You've waived that, and you've waived your due process argument. The court then took the matter up on plain error and said that because the court was just following its own rules, there's no plain error here either, and affirmed the decision. Now, I am aware of the decision and the case law.
You may proceed. As a matter of fact, if you need an extra minute, because we gave Ms. Nichols
a little
extra time, you can have it.
Thank you. I'm aware of the language that says that plain error is described as error of such a nature that to leave it uncorrected would result in damage to the integrity, reputation, or fairness of the judicial process.
When the judge said no cross-examination because you burned up your time, right? Did the judge say, I've done the math, and there's a DVD of 55 minutes?
Yes, Your Honor.
And there's another one of 50, and there's another of 49, and I've added it up, and that's attributable to your case?
That is true. I don't know if those are the exact minutes, but I know that in the record he details, I watched these three exhibits, and each one took this much time.
So that was the math that was put into the record.
It was put into the record. Yes, it was. Now, in terms of integrity, getting back to the plain error argument, I think integrity is we mean what we say. You've been given a limit. I think reputation means we're going to follow the rules. And I think fairness means the rules apply to all. So I don't think that this is a case of plain error, because everybody knew what was happening. Everybody knew how much time they had. Everybody was able to make decisions about how they wanted to proceed with their case. They got to make decisions about how they were going to be using their time.
Mr. Johnson, your time's expired, but I want you to step back from this case. I understand you say everyone followed the rules, no plain error, no objection. But from a systemic point of view, backing away from this case, what's the rationale that we really need time limits, particularly in a case outside of the metropolitan areas that have heavy dockets? I didn't realize that North Platte was a hotbed of activity in our courts.
Thank you. I've been practicing now for about 24 years in a non-hotbed of judicial practice out in Hastings, Nebraska. I do have a statewide practice, but I do a lot of my things out west. It is amazing how long it takes to get into a court. I had a case just recently that was continued because of some reason. It takes 6 months, 6 months to get another day. We need to spend more money, we need to hire more judges.
The time limits are critical to conserve that time so that people can have a prompt hearing. That's your response.
They are. I do not see our trial judges playing golf 2 afternoons a week. They work very hard, and I admire them. But it takes an incredibly long time to get to court. Incredibly long time.
All right. Thank you very much.
Is there any other questions I can answer for the court?
Thank you
very much. There is no time for rebuttal. So we will go on then to the next case of the day, which is State versus Ryan Lee Poe. I am recused from this case and also from the last case of the day. Justice Wright will preside and give me a moment to exit the courtroom.